Dead Boys. It is the award-winning podcast about the history and culture of death and decomposition. My name is Dorian. With me, as always, is Max. Max, you're a married man now.
I am.
It's very exciting. I am. Congratulations,
very
dude.
Very cool. Thank you.
Also, your wedding was very charming and lovely, and I am so glad that I got to go to it, and I love it.
Well, I'm glad that you were in it.
Yeah.
That was nice. It was very helpful for me.
Oh, I just stood there in nice clothes. I really didn't do much.
Great, doing great over here. Jambalaya is kind of good. Rumble and tumble.
You had jambalaya?
I made jambalaya. Yeah.
Oh, you just told me that for dinner you had a salad with a raspberry vinaigrette or whatever.
Yeah, and jambalaya.
That's a pretty sizable thing to exclude from what you had for
dinner. I texted you about the jambalaya.
You did?
I swear to God, I texted you about jambalaya.
Hold on.
Get your phone.
Great. We just finished some jambalaya. Well,
oh,
I fucked up.
So I'm doing great.
You're married.
I'm married. I'm full of jambalaya.
Dude, what did you put in your jambalaya?
I had some black beans, some chicken, Tony Cherries seasoning.
Really? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. That's that spicy seasoning you were talking about.
Yeah.
I just heard the word cherry and I was like,
nah.
What kind of monster are you?
Tony Cherries, got a little bit of cinnamon in there.
Mm-hmm.
It's good.
Nice.
Chicken stock.
Yeah, no shellfish for you, right?
No.
Yeah.
Can't do that.
Yeah, that's fair. That's making me hungry, dude. We should talk about death, huh?
We should talk about death. Before we talk about death, I did want to give a couple shout-outs to some cool stuff I saw on my honeymoon.
Oh, yeah.
We went to Northwest Michigan, around Traverse City.
Mm-hmm.
And we went to Guntsviller's Spirit of the Woods Taxidermy Museum,
ooh,
which I tweeted a photo of. It ruled. There's a ton of dope taxidermy for sale. There's a whale in the front that's painted like a minion for some reason. And then there's just like, you know, like a little museum that's full of taxidermied animals and some weird taxidermied things like jackalopes and deer with like boar snouts on them.
Ooh, I like the experimental combinations.
Chop and screwed, yeah.
Yeah, why should jackalopes have all the fun? Let's get some weird hybrid goose alligators in there.
There was a like a barracuda alligator. That was dope, yeah.
That's sick. What was it called again?
Guntsviller's Spirit of the Woods Taxidermy Museum.
That sounds awesome.
It was cool. You can do the whole thing in 30 minutes, but if you're ever up in Northwest Michigan, it's a good time to stretch your legs.
Yeah.
Kind of a boring drive, but you can do it. We also went to, I think you're going to think this is dope, Grand Traverse Commons.
Okay.
Have you heard about this?
No.
Have you seen this? Have you heard about this?
No, I don't know what this is.
So they were built in the late 1800s as the Northern Michigan Asylum.
Okay.
Which is cool.
Yes.
And it was this like quarter mile long, 70 foot tall complex that held 500 patients. But they were always like at or over capacity. So they started putting like little buildings around the campus and everything.
Uh-huh.
And then like the hospital closed and they had to shut everything down. And it was kind of in disrepair. Then in 2000, some developers saw it and they were like, interesting. And so they bought it and turned the old asylum into like apartments, like luxury apartments.
Okay.
With like shops on the bottom floor. It's super cool to walk through because the whole thing was like beauty is therapy was the guy's whole philosophy who made the asylum. So like there was a ton of green space and a lot of natural light and like a really pretty ballroom.
Huh. And yeah, because you say asylum, and I just think, like, prison, just something that's really dingy.
Yeah. It was gorgeous, yeah.
Wow, okay.
It was very cool.
That's awesome.
That was neat. It was cool. So if you're up there, go.
Yeah. I'm up that state up north. Because we Columbus, Ohio people are supposed to just, for no reason, hate Michigan.
It was terrible. I was like, people were throwing eggs at my car the whole time.
Yeah, saying, eat shit, Buckeye.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's getting swirlies in the gas stations.
No, it's cool to, you know, Michigan has cool stuff.
It's gorgeous.
I'm glad you guys had a good time.
Yeah, it was fun. We're not talking about Michigan the whole time, though. But I did want to dig into another Michigan, Ohio, Midwest treasure.
Are you saying that there's something that Ohio and Michigan have in common?
I am saying that there's something in common.
Oh, so maybe we shouldn't be rivals. We should come together and unite.
This is like Ebony and Ivory playing. And like we've taken this racial, beautiful racial harmony message and turned it into like dumb football shit.
Yeah.
No, I also want to make it very clear that when I say dig in to this thing, we shouldn't dig into it because that would be a crime. Because today we're going to be talking about Native American burial mounds.
Mm.
So don't dig into those.
Don't do it.
It's very bad. So without further ado, let's crack into today's topic with the official Pre-Dead Boys Crack Into the Topic Moment, brought to you today by La Vie.
La Vie. Mmm.
That Aldi water, man.
Aldi is the shit. Aldi is the only grocery store chain that I feel completely fine with unequivocally recommending. I mean, who else?
You don't like Stan Kroger? What's wrong with Kroger? Lucky's?
Kroger... I've had some bad experiences at Kroger.
Okay.
Some of which... I was a bagger at a Kroger as a teenager.
Oh.
So... Fuck Kroger. No, Kroger's cool. I shop at Kroger.
Lucky's is dope, but a little pricey.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's why I don't recommend it for everyone. Yeah. I like it because it's very close to my house, but.
Yeah.
Anyway, burial mounds.
Anyway, burial mounds. We are also drinking our La Vie out of some koozies my mother made for my wedding.
Your mom made these?
Did you not know that?
I didn't know that. These are badass.
My mom made these. They say, till death do us part. And it's got some skeletons on it. And then it says Maxwell and Katrina with my wedding day on it.
Yeah, these are beautiful.
I don't know. We might do a little sweepstakes and do a little drawing.
Oh, you have some extra of these.
I have
koozies.
Some extras, yeah. Do a little drawing for our fans.
Yeah.
We'll sign them. I don't know.
Wait a second. We're going to sign them? They'll say Maxwell and Katrina because they're from your wedding, right? And so you'll sign them with your name, Maxwell. Uh-huh. And then I'll sign them.
I can get Katrina too as well. I'm sure she'd be down.
I don't know. We'll figure it out.
Dox my wife on the podcast. So Native American burial grounds. Dorian, how aware of these would you say that you are?
Not extremely. I just know that there's kind of a stereotype of the superstition.
Oh, we'll get that.
If you disturb the burial mound, you're going to awaken a ghost or some evil spirit or something like that. I imagine a lot of these are kind of all over the place and get tread on more than they should, like bulldozed and built on.
Uh-huh.
But honestly, I don't really know much in the way of details. I feel like I've just kind of heard half stories and rumors. So... Mm-hmm. I want to get to the bottom of this. I want to hear the facts. Hit me with the facts, Max.
With the facts. That's kind of interesting, actually. And I'm interested to just talk about this. Because I remember learning a ton in, like, elementary and middle school about the Great Serpent Mound.
Yes.
Because it's really close to us.
Right.
When I say close, I mean it's, like, 2 hours away. There was no way they were going to put us on a bus for 4 hours round trip and, like, let us do a field trip. But, like,
Yeah.
But I did see this. When I Google mapped it, the Great Serpent Mound is right between two towns, Seaman, Ohio, and Peebles, Ohio. And I don't think it would have been good to have like a bunch of fifth graders go to those places on a bus.
Go to the mound between Seaman and P-Balls.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could see why there would be issues with that.
Just like the whole school is in lunch detention. So I don't know, like living in Ohio, I'm always a little surprised when people don't know about Native American mounds. Did you know that there's like a 25-foot tall one like 15 minutes away from here?
No.
Like it's like at the end of Fifth Avenue?
Like which end of Fifth Avenue?
Towards the river.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, it's dope.
I had no idea.
We'll have to go on a little field trip.
Yeah.
It's really cool. So growing up around them, I'm always a little surprised when people aren't aware of what these things are. But just as like an aside before we get into this a little more, I guess, when I was in school, it was always Indian mounds and like Indian burial ground and stuff like that. So hopefully we don't screw up. But we might.
Yeah, I think you and I have tried to condition ourselves a lot to say Native or Native American. But yeah, if we slip up, apologies.
Yeah.
We're working on it.
Yeah, we've been indoctrinated. So let's get into some history about what burial mounds are and the people who built them. The people who built them are collectively and kind of unimaginatively known as the Mound Builders.
Very creative.
So Dorian, I'm going to have you break off a little bit of history right here from old Wikipedia. Get that overview.
The various cultures collectively termed Mound Builders were inhabitants of North America who, during a 5,000-year period, constructed various styles of earthen mounds for religious, ceremonial, burial, and residential purposes. Mounds were not exclusive for burial, and some served as the town centers for the communities they were built in. Monk's Mound, which was the center of the Mississippian Native American settlement of Cahokia, still stands over 100 feet tall. The settlement is thought to have been home to up to 30,000 people, which no European settlements in North America reached until 1800.
Yeah, like, that's remarkable.
Yeah.
That this was like a city.
Right.
It's like the size of my hometown.
Yeah, it's very large.
And when people think of Native American mounds, I think there's like an instinctual reaction to think of burial mounds. But as you mentioned, they are not exclusively for that purpose.
Hmm.
And we are going to focus mostly on burial mounds today, but we've also erased Native Americans enough as a culture without doing that on the podcast.
Right.
So I figured we could also kind of talk about some of the other stuff they used it for as well.
Yeah, good to kind of put out that first stereotype that all of these mounds are just for burial purposes.
Yeah.
It's good to know that like there are other purposes for them. They were community centers too.
Yeah. So if you ever see one, you don't just go like, oh, I bet there are skeletons in there.
Yeah.
Not
and you don't fucking dig in them at all. Do not dig them up.
Oh, if you're just pissed about digging in them, you're going to be real riled up later.
Oh boy.
It's very stupid.
Put on my angry pants.
One of the biggest mound building cultures in general, as you mentioned, was the Mississippian culture, who ranged from Wisconsin to the Carolinas to Florida to East Texas. You can kind of imagine them like New York City, where it was a large community made up of a very culturally diverse group of people. So there were all kinds of different tribes who believed in different things and had different customs, some of which were radically different than each other, but they all kind of came together and had a general style of government and diplomacy and things like that.
Which I think is important to note, too, because the common perception I think a lot of Americans have of Native Americans is that they are Native Americans, and that's it.
Yeah.
It's kind of like how we treat Africa, too, where we just refer to African people and kind of forget that
it's like Africa's not a country.
Yeah, there are individual countries that vary widely in their culture and how they do things.
Yeah.
And likewise, you know. You can imagine we can fit 50 states in this territory. There were a lot of different types of people living here before Europeans immigrated over.
Yeah. It's like, it's genuinely very similar to New York City and just how different all these people were, but also how they just lived together, you know?
Right.
And it was fine. And, you know, it was really interesting because them all living together allowed for the development of things like treaties. They could help each other out. If a Wisconsin tribe's crops failed, they would trade with tribes in the South who had better harvests.
Hmm.
These treaties also allowed them to develop stratified cities, which is kind of like capital cities.
Okay.
So you'd have like a city hierarchy. So you'd have a city like Cahokia, which was the biggest city in their region, you know, 30,000 people.
It's a lot.
And that was the center of trade and government and everything. And then they would distribute decisions, information, all that stuff to the smaller cities, kind of like spokes going out of a wheel.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. But if you're going to build a city where a majority of decisions are going to be made for your people, you want to set apart the building that those decisions are made in. You're not just going to meet in someone's house, you know?
Sure.
So the groups decided to do this by building their ceremonial buildings on top of mounds. So these platforms were the first mounds to be established. And a lot of them are still around because they were pretty much just conical piles of earth.
Right.
Like if you think of like Mount Fuji, the like really gentle sloping sides, it looks like that.
Okay.
So it's not like the kind of super pointy, you would have a hard time walking up it thing.
Yeah.
It was just a big like man-made hill.
Got it.
So there's a couple artistic recreations of these sites. And I put a couple photos in here of a site in present-day Holly Bluff, Mississippi. And you can see how there's just like mounds. And the center one is the highest. And they are topped with buildings that probably had like religious or political events.
They're very trapezoidal. They're very like symmetrical and
yeah,
tidy looking. I mean, is that what they looked like?
Yeah, generally.
Okay.
Yeah,
because now I think of it in like the mounds that still exist are probably just nature taking their course and make them look more like natural hills, but I guess these, when they were constructed, they looked very, you know, orderly and
yeah,
dignified, I guess, as
yeah, they were done with a purpose, you know?
Right,
so you would have, if you were going to make the government building, you were going to make a really good official looking hill for it to be on.
Yeah. Right. There's a craft to it.
Yeah.
It wasn't just a random ass pile of dirt.
Yeah. And a lot of people think that because their building materials were a lot more rudimentary, you know, if you're only using light clay and sticks to build your buildings, you can't really differentiate the buildings too much. You
yeah,
can't really have like a grand state house like we would have. So they would put the more important buildings on the taller mounds. And that was the differentiation.
Okay. You know?
So in the same way that like my house is different than the state house, your home would be on a different mound than like where your tribe's chief lived, you know?
But could you imagine living in the state house? That'd be wild, huh?
It'd be very cool. It's all marble. It'd be super loud at night. So these religious sites are really cool, but as culture progresses, you're going to have particular leaders, both political and religious, who are really, really good. Like, they're charismatic, and they're bold, and they bring a lot of good things to your group, but, like all things, they're going to die. They're going to rot.
Yep.
And you could see how, like, if a leader had ruled over a town for, like, 50 years, you might feel weird being like, well, that's not, like, Jeff's hill. That was the guy before him's hill who was here for 50 years and did a lot of good things, you know? So you might feel weird using the same mound for a new leader.
Okay.
What would often happen is if there was a leader that had, like, particular renown, they would be interred in the mound that they had led from. So here's an example of how that kind of burial would work. And this is where we're going to start getting into what actual burial mounds were like, how they were constructed.
Okay, so you've sent me a diagram here.
I
thought I was going to be reading something.
No. No, it's just a picture. There are words on the picture.
Yes, there are.
You can see that this mound has like a wattle and daub structure on top. And I guess that just means like sticks and mud, but it's like a fancy word for that.
Okay.
I don't know. But then on like the back of the mound in the left side, there's a burial pit dug just down into the mound.
Labeled intrusive burial.
Yeah. Because they would just punch down, you know?
Yeah.
So you can also see how the mound is like tiered with prior structures that are kind of noted. Like, there's, like, the tall base mound, and then it's got, like, the foundations for a couple other homes, and then new layers of the mound built on top of it. That's because a lot of these cultures believed that a leader would inhabit a home with their spirit, even after death. So often, they would punch, like, a pretty deep hole in a mound mm-hmm. after a leader died, and then put their body down there, but then also tear down their home or where they had led from or where they conducted religious ceremonies from, burn that, and then dump the ashes into the same pit.
Okay.
And then they would build a completely new home on top of a new layer of soil that was laid over the mound.
Okay. So the tenant of that mound, they would die and they would be interred in their mound, and then they might build on top of that mound?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, like it would kind of be like they were paving over it.
Right.
You know, because they believed that the structure of the building and the structure of the mound wasn't really important. It was the personality and the building.
Hmm.
So if the building had special significance and the leader had significance, that meant that the mound itself was kind of sacred. But if you paved it over, it was kind of encased and kept as like a place where that leader could dwell.
Interesting.
It would be disrespectful for a new leader to live in the same house that the old leader did and to have the exact same mound.
So it was a sign of respect to literally build on top of their mound.
Yeah,
to start anew.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. So every time that someone would die, there would be a new layer packed on. And you can see how these eventually got to like 100 feet tall, you know?
Right.
As I mentioned earlier, Shrum Mound, which is the one in Columbus, it's like just north of Fifth Avenue where it hits the river.
Okay.
If any nerds are listening, Dorian.
Fellow nerds, that
it's
is.
It's just south of Guard Tower.
Oh, shit. All
right. Right?
Yeah, I know exactly where that is.
So that's probably an example of one of these kind of sequential mounds. So here's an image of the mound. It's an aerial view of it.
Okay.
So this is after you mentioned how nature would be reclaiming a lot of these mounds. Up until a few years ago, Shrum Mound actually had like 25 trees growing on top of it.
Hmm.
It was almost completely forested, and preservationists were actually worried that there would be like a storm. And if a storm brought down a tree, it would just tear up a bunch of ground on the mound itself.
Hmm.
So what they did is they clear cut the mound so that you would have a better idea of what it was like when it was built too.
Okay.
The plaque on it I thought was really nice too, if you want to read that.
Yeah. The Shrum Mound, preserved as a memorial to those first Ohioans whose bones rest in this ancient tomb. It's very cool. I just have a soft spot in my heart for anybody who cares to mention, like, by the way, the first residents here, first Ohioans.
It's also, like, kind of cool because this is right by, like, a 4-lane road. It's, mm-hmm. like, 20, maybe 30 feet off the road. But there's bodies in there.
Right.
And it's an archaeological site.
Yeah.
You know? It's kind of crazy that you're just like, oh, right, this is just not far away from the middle of the city.
Yeah.
And is a burial mound.
Yeah. This thing looks pretty big, too.
Like, yeah.
It's hard to judge scale from the aerial view, but what is that, like a little path going up to it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Shit, that's got to be pretty beefy.
I've walked up to the top of it, which they say is fine. I felt a little weird doing it, but I did it.
Okay.
And, you know, you're 2.5 stories up.
Yeah.
And it's probably about like 100 feet in diameter.
Okay.
I had to remember diameter and radius there for a second.
Okay, yeah.
But it's like a sizable thing.
Yeah, and cool. I mean, if native people had no hesitation of living on top of these, then yeah. I think if you are walking on them respectfully, I don't think you have anything to worry about, right?
Yeah, I'm not like blasting a beer as I get up there and
yeah,
taking a big poop on it.
Yeah, that would be very rude. Don't do that. And don't dig it up.
Don't dig it up.
Leave those bones be.
The weird thing about Shrum Mound is that we haven't really dug into it too much. Like, they haven't hit it with, like, ground-penetrating radar or anything.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't really know how many bodies are buried there. But based on the height, it's probably a couple.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool. So a quick recap of where we're at now. One, there are places where important political and religious rituals are held. Two, political and religious leaders would sometimes get buried there after death. And three, they would just kind of get filled over and get higher and higher after that. It's pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of the early burial mounds. But, like every culture, Native American culture isn't static. Things change and they develop, and Native Americans also really valued things like art and religion and tradition, stuff like that.
Sure.
So this led to the development of more intricately designed and single-purpose mounds, and this is where we really get to, like, burial mounds.
Okay.
Like a pure burial mound.
Where that's the only thing it's used for.
Yeah. So these were mostly built by the Adena and Hopewell cultures, but the Mississippian groups built them as well. Because they required a little more specialization of culture, like you had to have kind of an idea of religious ritual and things like that, they were usually built a little later, like a little past hunter-gatherer basic agriculture cultures.
Okay.
So they were usually about 200 BCE. Until Europeans showed up and started giving everyone smallpox in, like, the 1500s.
Class move. Dicks.
Class move. That's, I've never heard that before.
I might have accidentally made that up.
I thought it was, like, a new thing. Like, when you tell me dummy thick. I've never heard dummy thick before.
Yeah, I didn't make up dummy thick.
So one of the most populated, I guess, with dead bodies mounds is Craig Mound out in Oklahoma. Some of these mounds have really dumb names because they were like, it was just some guy discovered it and it was like the 1910s and they were like, I'm white and these people weren't, so
Craig
Mound.
Jesus.
So the mound was packed full of artifacts and was estimated to hold about 75 bodies.
Wow.
Which is a lot.
Yeah.
The bodies had to be packed in pretty tight just because of the geology and dimensions there.
Mm-hmm.
But here's a photo of how they were usually found.
Oh.
Yeah. So you see how, like, the stone coffin is much more of, like, a square?
Yeah.
A little more squat than, like, a normal coffin would be?
Yeah, it's still a rectangle, but it's definitely, I mean, the body is in a sort of fetal position, so it's smaller than the standard kind of
six stretched out, like, foot. Arms across the chest.
Right.
Dracula coffin.
Dracula coffins, yes. Yeah. Is that the professional term?
I just coined it, and now I, like, feel like I know how to explain what a coffin looks like to someone now.
We are single-handedly shaping the funeral industry. Everybody who listens to this who is a funeral worker, please spread the word. They're called Dracula coffins.
Yeah, yeah. Like, when you're, like, trying to give, like, burial options to someone, you can offer, like, a cool cremation where your ashes can be scattered somewhere beautiful. Maybe like a natural green burial. Or like a Dracula coffin.
Yes.
Just really kind of like work from the inside there.
What types of wood do you guys use for your Dracula coffins? What what options are there?
Yeah, like a nice oak. During excavation, so many bodies were found in Craig Mound that it became known as the Great Mortuary, which is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
But, unfortunately, old-timey people were dumb, and they were stupid, and they destroyed most of the artifacts during the original excavation in the early 20th century.
So this isn't like our usual goof talking about, oh, old-timey people didn't develop technology up to our standard of living, therefore they're idiots. This was actual dumb shit.
Just dumbassery.
Yeah.
Here's some information about the original dig and how cool it could have gone and how poorly it actually went, as well as some of the findings. This is from one of the labs that excavated the site in the 90s.
A local historian with the Oklahoma State Historical Society, James B. Thoburn, was the first person to officially discover Craig Mound in 1913 or 1914. The earliest owners of the land were very much against digging into the earthworks. They were, in fact, quite superstitious. The original allottee of the land on which Craig Mound is located was Rachel Brown. She claimed to have seen ghosts and blue flames, probably swamp gas, around the mounds. At the time of discovery, the mound was around 33 feet tall. Amateur digging and excavation efforts uncovered a cavity created within the mound, about 10 feet high and 15 feet wide, containing almost perfectly preserved fragile artifacts made of wood, conch shell, and copper. The conditions in this hollow space were so favorable that objects made of perishable materials, such as basketry, woven fabric of vegetal and animal fibers, lace, fur, and feathers were preserved inside of it. Between 1933 and 1935, Craig Mound was excavated by an enterprise that had bought the rights from local landowners to excavate and to keep or sell the artifacts they recovered. Tunneling into the mound and breaking through the mound's hollow cavity, they found many human burials. Unfortunately, they discarded the human remains and the fragile artifacts, made of textile, basketry, and even feathers, that were preserved in these extremely unusual conditions. When the commercial excavators finished, they dynamited the burial chamber and sold the commercially valuable artifacts made of stone, pottery, copper, and conch shell to collectors in the United States and overseas. Most of these valuable objects are probably lost, but some have been returned through donation and documented by scholars.
Yep. Just old-timey people doing dumb shit.
It's fur and feathers. I think it's useless. Give me the dynamite.
The fact that they used dynamite is, like, the most outrageous part. Like, they couldn't have just, like, left it.
People were real horny for dynamite around this period of time.
I mean, they didn't have Mythbusters, so they had to, like, blow stuff up somewhere else. But yeah, people were very stupid. It was completely unnecessary to just blow that up.
Yeah.
We've got some more dumb old-timey people coming up, too.
Great.
So, very good. Even one totally destroyed piece of history like this is one too many. But luckily, some of these mounds have stuck around, including Ohio's very own Serpent Mound, which is a totally sick name. So Serpent Mound is very cool and very, very big. You've seen photos of it, right?
Yeah. How big is it?
Like, you know what it is? What's your guess? What's your guess?
I have no idea, dude. Don't make me do this.
Come on.
1,000 feet?
A mile? Too low.
2 miles?
You were close with 1,000. But okay. Still, like, that's big.
Yeah, that's a big, beefy mound.
Yeah. So.
I'm sorry.
So, Serpent Mound is only about 3 feet high at most, but it's about 20 feet wide and extends for 1,376 feet.
Wow.
Which is almost 4 football fields in length.
Yeah, that's crazy.
It's big. So because of this, it's kind of difficult to get a full picture of the mound. You can only imagine how difficult it would be to build. But here's kind of a photo of it from, like, a drone or a plane or something like that. It looks old. It's probably a plane.
This thing's huge. It's very complex, too. Like, it coils at the tail.
Yeah. There's, like, a little spiral.
Yeah.
I feel like it's weird to describe what this is if you're not looking at a picture, but here's a description from the Ohio History Connection of what the mound looks like. Just paint a word picture for everyone out there.
The Serpent Mound extends about 1,376 feet, conforming to the curve of the land on which it rests, with its head approaching a cliff above a stream. The serpent winds back and forth for more than 800 feet and 7 coils, and ends in a triple-coiled tail. The shape itself consisted mostly of a layer of yellowish clay and ash that was reinforced with a layer of rocks and then covered with a layer of soil. The serpent head has an open mouth, extending around the east end of a 120-foot-long hollow oval feature that may represent the snake eating an egg.
Yeah.
Love it.
So, I mean, it looks like you look at this thing and you're like, that's a snake, all right.
Yeah, I was kind of wondering what the deal was with the head, because it looked real abstract and geometric, but I see it now. It's a snake eating an egg.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. It's really cool, and it also means that the Serpent Mound is the largest effigy mound in existence.
Huh.
So, like, OH, what's up? You look at Ohio me? Thanks, dog.
Io. Sorry. I didn't go to Ohio State, so I don't participate in their weird ass rituals. That weird fucking cult, Ohio State University.
So there's no bodies actually in the mound, but there were tons in the area around it.
Hmm.
So like just surrounding the mound every few feet, there was another grave. That's probably because the snake, like the animal, was sacred to the people who built it. And somehow the snake acted as like a guide for the spirits of people who were buried near it.
Hmm.
So it would kind of be guiding them towards something. It kind of reminds me of like the Nazca lines in Peru. Have you seen this?
No.
They're very cool, but they're like also multi-hundred foot long like mounds drawn in the sand.
Okay.
In Peru, in like the Peruvian desert, and they look like birds or like people, but they're like, you can really only see them from like a plane, in the same way that like you look at this thing and you're like, if you were on the ground, you'd be like, I don't know, this is like a weird hill.
Right.
But if you're up high, you'd be like, oh yeah, this is a snake, you know?
Yeah, that is interesting that like only with modern technology can we kind of see how cool this thing looks big picture.
Yeah.
It was probably harder to grasp for the people who actually built it.
Yeah. Which is why it's kind of a thing that was probably for spirits or gods.
Hmm.
Because they would be above and looking down and be able to see all that stuff.
Yeah. It wasn't made just for human entertainment.
Yeah. So speaking of the people who built it, that point has actually kind of been up in the air for a while now, which is interesting. So here's more from the Ohio History Connection on the mound.
Thousands of years ago, native Ohioans populated the landscape with mounds and massive earthworks. In the late 19th century, Harvard University archaeologist Frederick Ward Putnam excavated Serpent Mound. But he found no artifacts in the serpent that might allow archaeologists to assign it to a particular culture. Based largely on the nearby presence of Adena burial mounds, later archaeologists attributed the effigy to the Adena culture that flourished from 800 BC to AD 100. This theory on the site's origin was accepted until a 1991 site excavation used radiocarbon dating to determine that the mound was approximately 900 years old. This would suggest that the builders of the serpent belonged to the Fort Ancient culture, AD 1000 to 1500. In 2014, another team of archaeologists presented new radiocarbon dates for the serpent, suggesting that it was built by the Adena culture at around 300 BC. More work is needed to clarify the age of the Serpent Mound. The significance of Serpent Mound and other ancient Ohio earthworks has garnered international attention. In 2008, Serpent Mound was selected by the United States Department of the Interior for inclusion on the United States tentative list of sites to be submitted to UNESCO for inscription on the prestigious World Heritage List. If it is eventually inscribed on the World Heritage List later this decade, Serpent Mound will join the ranks of the Pyramids of Egypt, the Great Wall of China, Pompeii, Stonehenge, and the Taj Mahal.
It's very cool.
Yeah.
I mean, if you think about it, it is like a massive undertaking that ancient people did, like the pyramids or the Great Wall. And I think it deserves to get a little recognition for that.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Another one of the coolest things I found out about the Serpent Mound that I had no idea. It's built on the site of a meteorite impact.
What?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, which is just another one of those like tied into like the religious beliefs of the people.
Hmm.
Something like that. But once you start digging into the astronomical connections, there's a lot going on there. There's a connection between the serpent's head and the summer solstice, like the direction it's pointing, as well as both the spring and fall equinoxes.
Okay.
Which is interesting. And one possible date of the mound's construction also connects with a sighting of Halley's Comet.
Hmm.
Which is that one that shows up, however, every like 70-something years, 74, I think.
Okay.
So it's possible that the Native Americans that built it were connecting the shape of a comet as well as the shape of a snake and had something there. Because you see, like, the egg may represent, like, an actual ball with the snake being kind of like a comet's trail.
Huh. Okay.
So it's possible. It's interesting. Especially if there was some kind of knowledge that, like, a meteorite had struck there.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Huh. It's interesting.
Yeah.
It's kind of frustrating that we can't just get a crystal clear story of
what
these people were thinking.
Yeah. But with all these, like, astronomical alignment things combined with the size of some of these mounds, that also means that there's a lot of, like, big dummies and conspiracy people and, you know, people who, like, don't believe that there's any way Native Americans could have built the mounds. It's like the same thing you hear about, like, the pyramids in Egypt, like Stonehenge.
Yeah.
Where people look at them and go like, oh, wow, that would be really hard to do. There's no way people could have done that, you know.
There's no way your dumb ass could have done it.
I couldn't have done it. Those people are probably a lot smarter than me. So groups who people say actually built the mounds include the Vikings, Greeks, lost tribes of Israel, lost residents of Atlantis, pretty much just people who were like white people.
Yeah, and geographically nowhere near this at the time that it was constructed.
It's one of those things where you have to take such like a mental leap to get there.
Yeah.
To like justify you being like, there's no way these savage Indians could have built these things.
Probably a good old white person. Single-handedly.
Stupid. I don't know. People believe that they like Native Americans couldn't organize themselves or couldn't do the math. But either way, it's like kind of reductive and gross.
Yeah.
It's dumb. It's kind of a goofy aside here. But these alternative explanations for mounds all over the country were so popular in the 19th century that in 1897, the New York Times ran an article about how a 9-foot-tall skeleton was found in a mound in Wisconsin, which didn't happen. They also ran an article talking about how like gigantic skulls and thigh bones were found in a mound in Georgia.
Okay.
And how those belong to a race of 14-foot-tall giants.
Right on.
Which, like, I don't know, they were probably just, like, dinosaur bones that people found.
Sure, they could be anything.
Whatever. Or just, like, dumb old archaeologists. But it wasn't just, like, dumb old-timey archaeologists who believe this stuff and, like, conspiracy theorists and racists. Even better, Abraham Lincoln believed this.
Our boy Abe,
who is kind of a pre-Dead Boys hero for inventing the choke slam.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, he's not in the Hall of Heroes with like Lal Bahari and, you know, a lot of the really cool people that we've talked about that have done significant historical
good
things
work
specifically relating to death and death positivity. But the choke slam is tight.
He did the choke slam. He showed up in the death photography.
He did.
Trains.
Yes.
Body sealing.
Is he our mascot?
We're really into old Abe.
Yeah. Is he the pre-Dead Boys mascot, maybe?
I guess. He was a cool dude, except for, like, this weird tip he was on.
The skull that I drew in the logo. That's Abraham Lincoln's skull.
Lincoln's skull. So, Abraham Lincoln actually cited this theory. Like, we have this in writing in one of his journals from when he was a state representative. He was, like, in Washington and took like a tour of the Northeast states. So he saw Niagara Falls and he wrote this journal entry about it, which is really beautiful and captures a lot of what Niagara Falls is, but is also insane.
Niagara Falls! By what mysterious power is it that millions and millions are drawn from all parts of the world to gaze upon Niagara Falls? If the water moving onward in a great river reaches a point where there is a perpendicular jog of 100 feet in descent in the bottom of the river. It is plain the water will have a violent and continuous plunge at that point. It is also plain the water, thus plunging, will foam and roar and send up a mist continuously, in which last, during sunshine, there will be perpetual rainbows. The mere physical of Niagara Falls is only this. Yet this is really a very small part of that world's wonder. Its power to excite reflection and emotion is its great charm. But still there is more. It calls up the indefinite past. When Columbus first sought this continent, when Christ suffered on the cross, when Moses led Israel through the Red Sea, nay, even when Adam first came from the hand of his maker, then as now, Niagara was roaring here. The eyes of that species of extinct giants whose bones fill the mounds of America have gazed on Niagara as ours do now.
Isn't that wild?
You know, one of my favorite modern day phenomenons with social media and culture is just the poorly aged tweet. You know how like someone in particular politicians will say something on Twitter and then like...
Like when Mitch McConnell did the Lizzo thing.
Ooh.
That was weird.
Yeah. I don't know about that one. You'll have to tell me about that one later.
Is it something like, I'm just took a DNA test. I'm 110% that Mitch.
Oh, Mitch, buddy. What a piece of shit. Anyway, I love that happens with politicians today. But you know how, like, kind of sucks that we can't hold older people pre-Twitter to account for the stupid things that they say. Well, that's what our job is here. Welcome to Pre-Dead Boys. We're going to roast Abe Lincoln for some...
Putting his feet to the coals.
Goofy shit he said in the past.
It's, like, outrageous. Like, he wrote this very beautiful treatise on how pretty Niagara Falls is, and then wraps it by being like, yeah, that extinct race of giants who used to... There's got those mounds everywhere. They looked at this just like I am now. It's like, all right, Abe. Come on, dog.
Whose bones fill the mounds of America. Like, every hill Abraham Lincoln saw, he's like, there's giant bones in this.
Like, that's a giant graveyard. It's like, you realize that, like, I don't know, like, I don't want to knock him too much. George Washington didn't know what dinosaurs were. Thomas Jefferson was the one who, like, when they were doing westward expansion in the Louisiana Purchase, he was, like, getting, like, the front row reports of, like, people finding these giant skeletons and being like, what is this?
Mm-hmm.
But Abraham Lincoln thought that there were giants who buried people all over America.
He's an undoubtedly great man and a very important figure in American history. But nobody's perfect.
Nobody's nerfect.
That's right.
So this myth is pretty funny on the surface. It's easy to kind of goof and like dunk on the man who freed all the slaves for that. But it can also be really dangerous. It ignores the remarkable achievements and efforts of Native Americans.
Yes, it does.
It ignores the fact that they were able to organize. They were peaceful. They were intelligent. They knew what geometry was.
Right.
And it actually allowed white settlers to unfairly seize as much land as they wanted, too. So I wanted to close this out today with an excerpt from a Smithsonian Magazine article titled, "White Settlers Buried the Truth About the Midwest's Mysterious Mound Cities."
Despite the vast amounts of archaeological evidence that mounds were the work of sophisticated Native American civilizations, this rich history was obscured by the myth of the mound builders, a narrative that arose to explain the existence of the mounds. Examining both the history of Cahokia and the historic myths that were created to explain it reveals the troubling role that early archaeologists played in diminishing or even eradicating the achievements of pre-Columbian civilizations on the North American continent. Cahokia was built rapidly, with thousands of people coming together to participate in its construction. As far as archaeologists know, there was no forced labor used to build these mounds. Instead, people came together for big feasts and gatherings that celebrated the construction of the mounds. The splendor of the mounds was visible to the first white people who described them. but they thought that the American Indian known to early white settlers could not have built any of the great earthworks that dotted the mid-continent. So the question then became, who built the mounds? Early archaeologists working to answer the question of who built the mounds attributed them to the Toltecs, Vikings, Welshmen, Hindus, and many others. It seemed that any group other than the American Indian could serve as the likely architects of the great earthworks. Western retellings of Creek and Cherokee histories led to the view that these Native Americans were colonizers, just like Euro-Americans. This served as one more way to justify the removal of Native Americans from their ancestral land. If Native Americans were early colonizers too, the logic went, then white Americans had just as much right to the land as indigenous peoples.
Yeah, it's a real bummer.
Yeah.
Just like being like, oh, there's no way these people were smart enough to build these mounds. And then just like taking it.
Right. There's something really instructive there. Of like, conspiracy theories can be fun and wild and like a lot of silly good times can be had just like reading the dumb shit on the internet that some people believe. But it's instructive that when you kind of trace it back, like what is the thing that's presupposed, you know, like what is the thing that people have already assumed to be true without substantial evidence that is dictating what they believe.
Yeah.
And in this case, it's like, well, of course it couldn't be these people. Like there were already perceptions of Native Americans that kind of led to these theories. There's no actual evidence did not build these.
Yeah. It's very goofy.
But and then you start saying silly shit like, must be Vikings.
What are the fucking Vikings doing over here? They had so much dope stuff going back on.
Listen,
back home.
I am a white man, and I do, like, get giddy about Norse culture, like a lot of white people do. I love my Viking shit as much as anybody. But that being said, white boys need to chill out with their whole obsession with Norse culture sometimes. Sometimes it got back down. Vikings didn't invent everything cool. Vikings are not responsible for everything you like.
Yeah.
Just chill out a little bit, you fucking nerds.
It's just, I mean, if we've learned anything on this show, it's that death and death rituals and burial places are really important to people. And when people groups come together to create like a burying grounds, they will get stuff done.
Yeah.
You know, they're not like just goofing around. They're going to make something that's sacred to them. And if you want something sacred, it's going to look good, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that's my last word on it is like, maybe trust that Native Americans built this because it was a very important death ritual to them.
Yeah. And maybe instead of explaining it away or even just letting some important pieces of Native culture fall by the wayside, just take a moment to look at some of this stuff and appreciate, like, Native American people came together and built this stuff. And it's crazy. It's really impressive.
Yeah.
And man, I hope they add the Serpent Mound to the list.
UNESCO list?
Yeah, the UNESCO list. That would be so cool.
That'd be neat, yeah.
Good job with the research, as always, Max. This is very cool.
Thanks, man.
We would love to hear what y'all think about burial mounds, Native culture. You got opinions about how that sort of stuff is handled or any cool stories to share? Why don't you get in touch with us? We love talking to people who listen to this podcast. Yeah. We're not just, you know, big wig, hoity-toity, award-winning podcasters that sit on our yachts and don't talk to people.
We are sitting in two very fancy chairs right now.
They are. Yours looks like a giant clamshell, but asymmetrical and stylish.
Yeah, it's like not a papasan, but it's like I could put my arm over the side.
Yeah,
it's
you're nice. Very, very reclined, and it looks very cool.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yours is like a Tetris block.
It is. I like it because it keeps my back straight, and I'm old and have back problems. Anyway, talk to us. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram, at PreDeadBoys. You can search Pre-Dead Boys Podcast on Facebook, join our Facebook group, and you can email us, predeadboys@gmail.com. If you want to support what we do, we would really appreciate it. Number one is always tell your friends about this show. Share a link to your favorite episode with somebody, maybe this one in particular. All of our American listeners, Let's make some small effort to keep the culture alive of the people who were here before us.
And, yeah.
I don't know. If our little meager podcast can help do that in some small way, that would be really cool.
It'd warm my little heart.
Yeah. Share this episode with somebody. You can help us financially if you go to ko-fi.com/predeadboys. You can chuck us a little $3 or more tip. We would really appreciate that. Cover some costs for hosting and some other stuff that we're trying to cover. And a little teaser, we may have more news about possible ways to financially support us. And maybe you can get something in return for that. Max and I are still hashing out the details, but we've been brainstorming and we're trying to think of what would be really cool to kind of give back to you guys, like kick back some rewards and you know, keep growing this podcast. It's been really cool, and like we work, I would say, pretty hard on like trying to make this a cool resource for people and something enjoyable to listen to.
Yeah.
And we've gotten really good responses and a local award for it. And yeah, we might have some news soon about some of those rewards.
It's going to be a 15-minute bonus episode of me just making like Skeksis noises.
Oh, pretty good little sneaky Dark Crystal reference there. Also, you can leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher, and we will read it right here on this podcast. For example.
What?
Oh.
Oh!
This is from one sad Vols fan.
Oh, like Tennessee.
Vols. Yeah, Volunteers. Yeah, Volunteers. Yeah. Via Apple Podcast.
I was like, how can you be a fan of like a tiny little mole?
A vole? Yeah, I mispronounced
it. A vole is just a tiny mole, right?
Yeah, basically. No, one sad Vols fan. Sorry.
Okay. Sorry to the entirety of Tennessee for not knowing.
Yeah.
God, I hope it's Tennessee.
It's Tennessee Volunteers.
Okay, good.
We are two very cynical, jaded college football. Like, we don't care. So, sorry about that. We only care about Cleveland sports. Because that's Believe Land.
Yeah.
And we believe. Anyway, one sad Vols fan says, positively death positive. 5 stars. I am so impressed by the Pre-Dead Boys podcast. They managed to make death tongue-in-cheek without being disrespectful or flippant. They are a great addition to the death positive movement. It's always a great day when there is a new episode. Or even re-listening to an older one. It's very sweet. Thank you.
That's very sweet. I don't think I've ever re-listened to an episode of a podcast. Ever.
I have on occasion, and that's very flattering because I've only reserved that for like absolutely favorite episodes.
Yeah.
That's
very sweet.
That's very sweet. And good luck to the Tennessee Volunteers. I don't have an allegiance to any college football team at all, so I'll just say it right here. I'm a Volunteers fan.
Stand the Volunteers.
Hell yeah. I do love Tennessee. Wait, where is
You asking me where is Tennessee? It's below
Kentucky. No. Where's the Volunteers? Where's the University of Tennessee? Is that anywhere near Nashville?
Because
I love Nashville.
Do not know.
Oh, it's near Knoxville.
Oh, you got all that gold there.
Gold! Anyway, shows what we know. thank you for the very kind words, one sad Vols fan. Good luck to your team. Our intro and outro music is the song About Time by Brat Curse. Check them out at bratcurse.bandcamp.com. Maybe add their new album to your Spotify queue. That's very good.
You absolutely should. They got some bangers on there. The song Acid Capsule Tina is a personal favorite of mine.
I like really Sweatpants rips. Lawyer.
It's a good one.
Yeah, they got a lot of fun song titles on
there.
And it fucking rocks. It's a great punk album. And I think that's that covers everything.
As far as I know.
Yeah. Well, it looks like we've dug to the bottom of this.
No, again, you cannot do that. That is illegal. These are heritage sites. You can't.
I don't know about that. So something I'm going to have to dig into.
Stop saying that.
I'm going to have to dig into the laws.
Stop it.
I'm digging.
That you can't. No, we're going to go on a field trip to the Shrum Mound. We're going to drive 15 minutes. I'm going to rub your nose in this mound with a piece of paper.
Ow. Stop digging. Am I a dog? Is that
what you're like a dog thing there? I don't know.
You're treating me like a dog. That's fine. Max and Dorian here, reminding you, you're gonna rock.
So go ahead and read that. Just paint a word picture for everyone out there.
The beefy mound. Nah, just kidding.